The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Eva talking. BL and I will be sharing the work again this time, and we encourage you to check out the attachment of the actual slides that we have in PDF. Either you can do that before or after we're all done, but it's available. So BL.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our Gemini broadcast. Let's see what we've got here. Okay, so Gemini relates to the third house. It's a mutable air sign. It relates to Ray 2. Typically May 21st to June 21st is the time of the year. It's the third sign of the zodiac. It's dualistic, naturally, with it being twins. It's a mental sign, and it portrays various mental processes. It can be rational, intuitive mind. On the higher spiral, it's spirit and mind carried into manifestation through the right use of hands in words. Undeveloped Gemini can be scattered, inconsistent, unreliable, or superficial. Sorry, I'm having trouble talking here. It rules the lungs, the arms, shoulders, hands, and the nervous system. Traditional ruler is Mercury, soul ruler, Venus. Strengths: clever, adaptable, versatile, communicative, witty, curious, bright, intellectual. Yes, I'm all these things. This is my ascendant. Weaknesses: okay, I've got those two. Scattered, nervous, superficial, inconsistent, overly talkative. Unstable, changeable, restless, scheming, lacking in concentration or follow-through. Hey, I think I've worked on that last one. Esoteric Gemini, to give love wisely and to apply wisdom lovingly, to balance the head and the heart, to promote right relations, to bring dualities to resolution, to still the mind. I still have a long way to go on that one. I love these pictures here. Look at Curious George. Perfect Gemini, isn't he? Communications, clever, teachers, and socializing. The house that Gemini rules is a source of education and learning for you, where you're going to be curious, versatile, and fun-loving, what you like to talk and think about. In the third house, the soul brings the lower self into contact with people and knowledge, which will develop the logical mind. This is the house of communication, relatives, siblings, early education, all directed to opening the mind. The lower self keeps busy. It travels around making contact and communicating with others. Well, maybe not quite right now, but it receives education to develop the mind. When the mind is developed, the first tentative steps on the path or to make connections with others who share similar ideas. And eventually, the personality begins to communicate in a new and a higher way with others. The exoteric ruler, Mercury, that's Ray 4. He's the messenger of the gods. He's Hermes. Mercury is the esoteric ruler in Aries, the initiation of ideas. Mercury is the exoteric ruler in Germany here, as we've been talking about. Mentally moves quickly, multiplicity of ideas. So you see the difference between the two ways that Mercury rules these two signs. In Gemini, where there is many-ness, you can't go deep. There's more breadth here than there is depth. But it's all part of gaining that experience. The esoteric ruler of Gemini is Venus, Ray 5, also associated with Ray 2. It's intelligent love. She's the goddess of love, also called Aphrodite. Venus is the exoteric ruler in Taurus, beauty of form. The exoteric ruler of Libra, beauty of ideas and how to be in relationships. And the esoteric ruler in Gemini, beauty of ideas again, of thought forms, of language, of refinement of thought. This brings out the best in language. The change from Mercury to Venus, how do you know? Well, look at the aspects between Mercury and Venus in your chart. They're going to relate to mental refinement. If they're conjunct, you could be adaptable, cooperative, suave. Harmonious aspects like the sextile, the trine, and the quintile could indicate you're articulate, diplomatic, polished. Inharmonic, such as the crosses and quincunxes, they could indicate that you're awkward, inarticulate, vacillating. Over to you, Eva.
Okay, thank you. So now we're looking at the opposite of Gemini. So Gemini is usually its home is the third house. So if we go directly opposite it, we get to the ninth house, which is the house of Sagittarius. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily have Sagittarius as the cusp of your ninth house, but it just rules that ninth house. So that qualities associated with Sagittarius would still demonstrate themselves in that particular house. Now, the rays associated with Sagittarius are three of them, and it's very unusual that the Tibetan has given us three rays for a particular sign. Usually he's given us one, the odd time two, and very little that have three. And you know what the three would be. There would be personality, there would be soul, and there would be the monadic ray or the spirit. Which of these we don't really know. One could pretty well guess at it, depending on the way in which people play out these rays in their lives. It's mutable. It's on the mutable cross, which is changeable, as we know. It's not fixed. And it's fire, a lot of fire to Sagittarius. The dates usually associated with Sagittarius are from November 21st to December 21st. And in the Northern Hemisphere, it's late autumn. Mutable fire speaks of tremendous action. When you look at a flame, the flame is usually not still. It moves around. It's very, very active and fiery, and that's very much the way Sagittarians behave. Now, the actual arrow, if you look at the glyph at the corner up there, it's got a line through it. So it's divided in half, really. It's got one side of it and two, which makes us think of a duality. So in that respect, it's similar to Gemini, because Gemini, it has the Roman numeral 2 as its glyph, but it's 2. It's also duality. It is often at a loss of how to aim great physical or mental powers. Therefore, depicts battle between constructive, which are the noble attributes of man, and the destructive, which is most bestial of carnal habits. Why do we have that in here? Because for the longest time, the centaur was the symbol associated with Sagittarius. And the Centaur is half animal, which brings out the instinctual nature, the animalistic nature, and it's got half human. And the human is supposed to represent the more noble attributes. Eventually, we know that the symbol has been changed for the archer on a white horse. So it's no more half animal and half human. It's the human that has mounted upon that white horse. So now he's above those instincts and moving into the intuition part. It rules the haunches, the loins, the thighs, the upper legs. And many times it's associated with a horse, and a horse is very, it jumps off its back legs many times. And you have that whole idea of very strong legs for Sagittarians. Hence, they are involved in a lot of sports. Running and climbing and all kinds of sports where the physical energy is required there. It rules the liver, the hips, the thighs, the pelvis, and the femur. Because of the fire element, it is very passionate. It's one of the few signs that is that has the passion behind it. And we can even say that it looks at life with rose-colored glasses. What ray is that? That's the sixth ray that comes with Sagittarius. The passion, the looking ahead and being visionary, because the arrow, as you can see, is upward pointing into the higher realms. Its traditional ruler, or the exoteric ruler, is Jupiter. And the esoteric ruler is the earth. Okay, so some of the strengths, without it sounding like a laundry list, let's just kind of go through them. Very optimistic. Why? Because again, it has Jupiter, which is so beneficent and large, and it has this upward vision that it makes it so optimistic and freedom loving. Very jovial. Honest, because the arrow is the arrow of truth. Straightforward, the arrow is. But because it has the ability to go into the higher realms, it can be philosophical, it can be religious, it can be into the occult, into any kind of higher learning. And it's like looking up into the sky and being able to see the big picture. Therefore, it leads to being broad-minded. With a global vision. There are only two signs in the zodiac that are visionary. One of them is Sagittarius, and the other one we talked about last month, which was Taurus, which ruled the Ajna Center, which is the eye of vision, the bull's eye. With that sixth ray, it's idealistic. And hopefully one has reached that level where she or he can be intuitive. That is the upward or spiral movement upwards from instinct to intuition. The adventure has to do with the fact that it goes out into the unknown. Love of experience, and as we mentioned, quite athletic, generous because of Jupiter, scholarly, looking to learn the higher realms, whether it's higher maths or any kind of philosophy. And of course, the enthusiasm, that sixth ray enthusiasm. Some of the weaknesses is blindly optimistic. Well, you know, rose-colored glasses do not really allow you to see things as they really are. And many times Sagittarians will be late. Why late? Because everything will turn out okay. So why do I have to, you know, rush or do anything? It always will be positive. It'll always be optimistic. But that kind of optimism can be a weakness, as you can see here. Carelessness, reckless, take chances. They love to take chances. Irresponsible sometimes. And as much as the arrow is supposed to lead to a focus, they can be scattered and unfocused, which leads to tactlessness. Why? Because they're arrows of truth. Well, if you're blunt and you say it like it is, you lack that ability to be diplomatic. It's fire, so it's very restless. It can exaggerate, again, because of the largesse of Jupiter, which we'll get into very shortly. And it lacks restraint. It does not know when to not say things that shouldn't be said. That sixth ray can lead to fanaticism because they look for the ideal. The ideal is way up there and can be very narrow, like that arrow is very narrow. Argumentative, overly talkative. We had the same thing in Gemini, didn't we? Overly talkative. Procrastinating. Why? Because everything is going to turn out just right. Everything will be just fine. Self-indulgent. We said blunt already. Impatient. They can be the best gamblers. Why gambling? It's because it's visionary and because they take risks and they have great optimism. Pushy and hot-headed because of the fire in them. Esoterically, Sagittarius likes to experience all facets of life in order to develop a complete acceptance, understanding, and love of all cultures and people, to become spiritually focused and to learn to trust one's vision. And that is why the ninth house, the house of Sagittarius, deals with travel and all kinds of outward experiences, because this is how they learn. They learn the cultures of people by exposing themselves to the various experiences in the world. Thank you. So here are some great pictures again. Honesty, as we said, arrows of truth, holding the ideal, the vision way up high with the torch. The house the Sagittarius rules is where you will be challenged to explore and expand your horizons, where you can dream the impossible dream, where you need to have more faith and trust. So look at the words that are being used here, the word faith, and we'll come across that again and again. The idea of the expansion into new horizons, into higher learning, and the idea of trust and honesty. You see the passport, you see the different cultures here. And at first those arrows, and when I'm looking at the word aspire smack in the middle there, at first those arrows fulfill the desire that is very strong within the individual. Later on, that desire is spiraled up and becomes aspiration to the higher. And that fire allows it to become inspirational. So some of the best preachers and some of the best leaders, if they have Sagittarius, they can inspire their multitude. They use that energy of fire and the upward lift that sixth ray gives them, that buoyancy that they can inspire. Okay. So Jupiter, that's the exoteric ruler. Jupiter is also known as the king of the gods, Zeus or Jove or Hove. I don't know how you pronounce that. It says 12 years. I guess that's how long it takes for it to do its orbit. Words associated with Jupiter, because it's the largest planet in the solar system. So when it's largesse, it's all about abundance and fullness and a lot of its expansion. And words like more or a tendency to too much. Sure, we all like the whole idea of benevolence and abundance and the idea of expansion, but if there's too much of that or too much of any particular thing, all depending where your Jupiter is, that's not always the best thing, is it? It's a sacred planet. He is known, Zeus or Jupiter is known as the one who gathers the clouds as he sat on Mount Olympus as the head ruler. It indicates the greatest areas of harmony, abundance, and synthesis. It is fullness and fulfillment, and it corrects that which is lopsided. It is progressiveness, and it distributes the second ray and the seventh ray together, and we see that in pride and pomp. It is supposed to facilitate the fusion of heart and mind to produce wisdom. And wisdom is often associated with the second ray planet of love wisdom. So if you have or are a second ray soul, Jupiter is the soul planet, if you know what I mean, because it conveys love wisdom. Okay, move on. It's associated with the growth of wisdom and the expansion of consciousness. It is the beneficent method of evolutionary unfoldment. What is evolution? Evolution moves constantly upward in a spiral cyclic action. And that is what Ray 2 is all about. So it moves up to love and eventually up to wisdom. In its lowest aspect, it's the fulfillment of desire and satisfied demand. And in its highest aspect, it's the outgoing expression of love, which attracts magnetically to itself that which is desired. So because it's such a huge, huge planet, we usually associate it with radiation, which is a second ray word, as well as magnetism. It attracts through that magnetic quality that is associated with the second ray. It has a lot to do with philosophies, belief systems, faith, high principles, the true and the sacred. To the soul, it represents where the life can be expanded and where brotherly love is expressed. Where it is in your chart, it will always represent grace and shows what sorts of experience and modes of activity generate inner faith and confidence in oneself. Those are key words, inner faith, confidence, belief systems, if you have that strong within you, you can move in the world in a particular way, right? So that's what Jupiter would represent. And Jupiter and all elements, it tends to flow rather spontaneously and even excessively. And as we said, it represents abundance or reservoir that is naturally flowing. So for the most part, Jupiter is considered a very positive planet in one's chart. But again, it all depends how it lines up with other planets. Something that is too much is sometimes too much, not necessarily the best thing. It can lead to indulgence and all kinds of other things. So we have to always look to see what lines up with Jupiter in one's chart. Now, for Sagittarius, for Sagittarius, the esoteric ruler is the Earth, and the Earth is very important for Sagittarius. You can actually see that within the circle there's this cross. Well, if you look back at the glyph of Sagittarius, it's got the upward arrow, and then it's got a crossbar that is there for one to be able to almost put their hands on the bar and go, whoa, just like you try to rein in the horses that want to run away. The idea with Earth is to take all that stuff that's way up there, the higher learning, the abstract stuff, and bring it down to Earth. And that's why Earth is so important for Sagittarius. It is always opposite the sun. So wherever your sun is, you will find in your chart, depending on what program is being used and if the Earth is showing, but it's always opposite the sun. And I think we've said this in a previous webinar that it represents also the monadic point. But that's an aside. What is important to know is that the Earth for Sagittarius is so important to help ground the ideas, the thoughts, the learnings, the philosophies, the higher education, that it has a real tendency to know and to have. Okay. So it opens up the realms of the soul through crises, which are the crosses of matter. The key word for the Earth is selectivity, because of the practical, grounded approach. We learn to select what works and what's not, selectivity. It's not a sacred planet, and we're on it. It's in the process of becoming sacred. because it has not reached its sacredness yet, it is one of the planets that has upheaval. It's difficult. It's difficult to live on this earth, and we're all part of it. I guess right now we are all experiencing that. So the reason all of this is being said here is because through suffering we learn, and through suffering we grow. And as much as we don't like to recognize that, it is a planet of suffering and chaos and upheaval. Until such time as we become a sacred planet, which will be millions of years down the road. It has a pivotal importance in the life of all Earth beings. It indicates the condition of one's vitality. Insufficient vitality or excessive vitality, poorly distributed, can thwart soul's intent. Abundant, well-regulated vitality is a definite boon to the fulfillment of the soul's archetypical design. And that's why we know that you eat the bounty of the earth. You want to eat things that have prana in it. You want to feel grounded on the earth, because the earth is what gives us our vitality. It is even said many times that we should be walking barefooted on the ground to get the energy of the earth into our system. Okay. We must not forget the energy which emanates from or radiates from the earth itself. And that's exactly what I was referring to, walking barefooted. Man is always bathed in the emanations and the radiations of our earth. Sagittarius can get lost in the manyness, again, Jupiter. Earth brings the energy down and grounds it, holds it down. It is practical and selective. The aspect of life on earth, although felt by everyone, is especially strong for the signs of the element of earth. So anyone that has strong earth, whether it's your sun, your moon, or your ascendant, they can be in Taurus, Virgo, or Capricorn. These are the three signs that are earth signs. Even though Sagittarius is not, it relates to a lot of the earth signs because the earth is its esoteric planet. The first impulse for man is to be and then to create. Earthy people create something out of matter, that's earthy stuff, through the gathering of material possessions and the actually building of the physical aspects of man, whether they be his industries, his home, or even the physical body, how you build your physical body through exercise, through food, through fresh air. We therefore refer to the earthy element as the force of form, because it has to do with form, with matter. Okay. So what is the focus from Jupiter to Earth? Again, we would look for aspects in the chart between Jupiter and the Earth. If they are conjunct, that means joined together, one beside the other. You could be practical, all the earthy things, practical, grounded. You can manifest abundance because you have a real handle on earthy things. Harmonious aspects could indicate that you manifest harmony, abundance, and synthesis. Now, if they're inharmonious, your aspects, like crosses and quincunxes, they could indicate that you create muchness, fulfilling desire and satisfied demand. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about some of the earth signs. In Taurus, it's one's actual possessions. In Virgo, it deals with jobs and services. In Capricorn, it has to do a lot with governmental or business establishment or one's social standing. On the positive level, earthy signs, they circumspection, long-range planning, determination to succeed, and practicality is what one would distribute or emanate. On the negative level, the earthy signs may be too demanding, too much material things that they want, too many things to make them feel good. Could be melancholy, greedy, that has to do with the materiality, and fearful, like hoarding a lot of toilet paper, you know, that's material, and because people are fearful. Earth is unequally the planet of releasing sorrow and of purifying pain. And it has, as we have said, it's directly opposite the sun. I think, yeah, to the soul, it represents the field of experience to bring about soul growth. Well, we live here. This is our field of experience here on Earth. As the ray of the abstract mind, ray three, and that's the ray of the Earth, is ray three, it provides a field of practical experience where intelligence can be developed, where personality consciousness can be transformed into group awareness, and right balance in the nature can be achieved. So it's got a ray three component to it. Is it an exoteric ruler anywhere for any of the signs? No, it's never an exoteric ruler. It is only an esoteric ruler. So it's the esoteric ruler of Sagittarius. And my mind is going blank as to which other sign it's associated with. But
Gemini. I believe it's the hierarchical ruler of Gemini.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. And that's why it's in here. And of course, I should have seen that. Earth is related to Gemini, to the brother whose light is waning, since Earth is not a sacred planet. So we know that one of the brothers is waxing, and that's the soul, and the other one is waning, and that's more the personality. And personality is often associated with the Earth. Esoterically, Earth is a school for souls as we progress from grade to grade in order to learn the laws of life and coordinate our activities in line with a gaining sense of direction. See that? That's Sagittarius. In the Sagittarian cycle, our journey through life on the terrestrial plane, we follow a path that leads upward, as the arrow or the glyph indicates. We learn the laws of life. The laws of life are what we learn on those higher realms. That's where principles are. That's where laws are. So, yeah. Okay, I think it's your turn.
Yep. Okay. Before I start on the actual polarity, are there any questions about either, the refresher that we've given you on Gemini or Sagittarius? Okay, I don't see any questions, so I'll proceed. Okay, so these two signs, what we've been talking about is cultivating a dialogue between the personality and the soul, creating new ways to awaken the intuition and become more directed towards the soul.
I did see Yvonne's hand up there for a second, so I'm not sure if that still is the question that she has.
Okay, there we go. Go ahead, please, Yvonne.
Okay, well, you mentioned the monadic point. Earth is the monadic point opposite the sun sign, and I had, I wondered about that, and I've forgotten the answer. Is the monadic point, is it your monadic ray, or is that something different?
You know, there's very little literature on that. It could be the ray of the monad, but I doubt it. We just know that it is Michael has made constant reference that it's the monadic point. So there's something very powerful in where the Earth is.
Yeah, I believe there's a reference to it somewhere in DK that speaks very similarly to the way he talks about the ascendant, the sign on the ascendant pointing to the purpose of the soul. You know, it's not flat out. There's no direct correlation, and I believe the same thing is true for the monad. And it's It's also considered one of the, you know, the triple suns that they talk about, you know, the ascendant, the sun, and then the opposite point, which is the monad, when they refer to it in the context of the triple sun. So it points to it in some manner, but it doesn't give us a clear cut. Okay, well, your earth is in this, so it must be that. Okay, does that give you a wishy-washy, we don't know answer?
Thank you so much.
Okay.
But I think what you pointed out, BL, is really accurate here. Just like we cannot know the ray of the ascendant by looking at the ascendant, we don't know the ray of the monad by looking at the monad.
Right, right. It gives us hints, but we have to go, we have to look further to see what those hints may be telling us, okay? We also have another question from Rachel. How can we understand more Earth as the hierarchical ruler of Gemini? Well, the problem is that most of us are not relating yet to the hierarchical rulers. Most of us are still fighting with the duality that we face between the exoteric rulers and the esoteric rulers, and the chart turning in on itself, you know, in the sense that we have a personality life still, and we have a growing soul life, but sometimes they're at odds with each other. We have to resolve, you know, you have to take the second initiation. We have to resolve the dualities before we can become receptive to the higher energies that come through for Gemini as the hierarchical ruler, or the Earth as the hierarchical ruler of Gemini. Again, this is a planet of experience. It's a planet that's moving from the ray third to the second ray. When it becomes a sacred planet, that, my understanding is, will be the soul ray. And Gemini leads us that way. Gemini is the Antikorana. So basically what we're doing as we raise the Earth from a non-sacred to a sacred is we're relating it from a soul level to a hierarchical level. Eva, do you have anything you would like to add to that?
No, I think you did just fine with that.
Yes, and then Rachel also says Gemini is a Ray 2 sign. Yes, it goes hand in hand with the fact that the Earth's personality is Ray 3, but it will, when it becomes a sacred planet, you know, its soul ray is ray two. So that ties into it as well. You know, and that's what's important, is that we understand all these little tiny components that relate to all the different things. You know, it's all about how they relate together and a piling up of those relations and an affinity of those relations. So thank you. Good question.
Here's where I could add something.
Okay.
If that's okay. Many of the well-learned astrologers believe that Gemini, being the third in the lineup of signs, conveys not just the second ray, but also conveys the third ray. Now, the Tibetan hasn't given this to us, but that is the general thinking of many astrologers. If it does, and there's a certain scatteredness, there's a certain busyness to Gemini, there's a manipulative ability, there's very, very strong third ray qualities associated with Gemini. If in fact it does convey the third ray, we can see the resonance with the Earth and the third ray that might be in Gemini as well.
Right. As you say, those learned astrologers They hypothesized that what DK was giving us with Sagittarius, where he gave us the three rays, that there was in fact a three-ray relationship with every single sign like that. He just didn't spell it out for us, and some have tried to look at the relationships and stuff. So, okay, we've got a Frida's got her hand up. You're self-muted, Frida. Go ahead. You're still self-muted. Frida? Well, you're self-muted. I can't unmute you. Your hand went down, so okay. If you get your sound worked out, raise your hand again. Okay, and then we have... Suzanne asked, can you elaborate on Gemini being the Antikorana? Actually, probably it's more Mercury is the Antikorana. I think in terms of them all being related. But, you know, he is the messenger. He's the messenger between humanity and the gods, you know. And so that's part of the Antikorana. That's what we're building. We're building the pathway from the personality to the soul, from the soul to the triad, from the triad to the monad. And Mercury is very important in that. And because he's so important in Gemini, Gemini is important in that too. Gemini is also the the personal integration. And that leads us to Sagittarius, which is the higher learning. It's the spiritual integration. And that, so that Gemini-Sagittarius axis can be considered, you know, the Antikorana in that way. So again, it's all about the analogies that we know through the mythology of Mercury, through what we've studied about Gemini and Sagittarius. So I hope that answers your question, Suzanne. Okay, Susan has a question. Go ahead, Susan. Susan, did you have a question? You're unmuted. We can hear your dog.
No question. I hit the hand by mistake.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I think we're good to go then. So let's start on the axis. Gemini and Sagittarius, they are part of the mutable cross. Gemini adjusts relationships and Sagittarius adjusts actions. One sign is part of the Ray 2 triangle that we've talked about with Virgo and Pisces, and the other is part of the Ray 6 triangle, also with Virgo and Pisces. So they relate to the whole cross in that manner. Exoterically, it's adaptable and versatile, which is active, flexible, and changeable. This is the cross, but it can be too inconsistent. Esoterically, it helps us develop the form life via multiple incarnations. Basically, what we need to do is live and learn and experience life in all of its aspects, and that's what we learn through the mutable signs. Let's look at the two of them together and in contrast. This is the messenger versus the adventurer or explorer. It's treading of many paths versus the path itself achieving glorification. The immediate environment or the distant horizon. Multidirectional or unidirectional and one-pointed. Changeable perception versus steady and clear-eyed understanding. doubting and skepticism, or faith and belief? Factual versus exaggeration. Beside the point or straight to the point? Gemini is the perpetual wanderer, fleeting here and there to experience all things and situations, never landing in one spot too long. He seeks and gathers facts with no coordinating theme. His efforts to rectify his sense of inadequacy stimulate this constant motion as he tries to adapt to every contingency. Sagittarius is that ponderous philosopher, strict beliefs, moral standards, but he may be limited by conviction of having found the one and only truth, creating religious prejudice and bigotry. Mental growth only occurs through the complexity of individual relationships within the overall scheme. This is versatility versus overextending. The flexible and versatile Gemini just breezes through everything, while the Sagittarian can be known to get bogged down by overextending himself in many situations. When confidence in the divine order of the universe is lacking, we lose our ability to relate man to God, resulting in a cynic who knows everything but believes nothing. The Gemini's inability to categorize demonstrable facts can blind the soul to the underlying unity of all. He refrains to declare where the facts should lead, but it's because he wants the individuals to make up their own minds. He wants to be fair to all sides. The Sagittarian's complacent assumption that he is the chosen messenger results in his refusal to face facts. He believes education and religion are like stones to be cemented together to create a sum that is greater than its parts. But those can also become stumbling blocks on the path. Gemini cultivates knowledge, but it can be more of a concrete nature, while the Sagittarian searches for true wisdom and explores abstract concepts. The Gemini wants to be conversant with the facts of a situation and understand how they fit together. The Sagittarian cares more for attitudes and wants to understand why the various elements fit together. For a balanced Gemini-Sagittarius axis, knowledge should lead to faith, and faith should inspire a quest for increased knowledge. Problems are not solved by intellect, but they're resolved by the progressive expansions of consciousness. The wisdom to apply Gemini's accumulated information comes through the Sagittarian's travel, study, and meditation. And the philosopher can't just sit on the sidelines. He needs motion and quick mind to join the human race. Gemini Sagittarius on the higher spiral is establishing control of the opposites and resolving duality through one-pointed spiritual action. Gemini is the messenger and the teacher. Sagittarius is full of faith and is the preacher. Eva, over to you.
Okay, here we go. So what is the relationship like between the two? For ordinary humanity, there is this interplay, which is so much a Geminian word, interplay, and instability against the Gemini word that leads to personality, focus, and determination. The man then is one pointedly devoted to personality achievement. That is Sagittarius, that whole devotion. The threefold lower nature is then synthesized and directed controls of all activity. So we see the two work together, the instability, the interplay, then the one-pointedness. And then if you can get those to work together, so that's not unstable, then they can be synthesized. For disciples and initiates, the result of this related pair of opposites is that there is that one-pointed soul effort, spiritually directed activity, and a demonstrated readiness for initiation. There is the waning of the power of form and the waxing of the life of the soul. Okay. Now, these are both highly mental signs. You may ask, how is Sagittarius a mental sign if it is a fire sign? While Gemini, being an air relates to mental, why are they both considered mental signs? The Gemini is obvious. Sagittarius is considered mental because it is the arrow that points up to the abstract, to that which is still unknown and to be discovered. So it takes care of all the abstract learnings, whether, as we said, philosophy, religion, higher levels of learning. So in that case, they are both mental signs. They were both very active at the time of individualization. That's when we became human beings. Both have to do with the bringing of intelligence to the earth. Both share an earth rulership and relationship to the Ray 3. Earth ruler, Sagittarius, esoterically, and in Gemini, it's hierarchically. So we're repeating what we've already said. Both signs of great both are great activity and changing environment. We know that in Gemini there will be more scatter and more movement. In Sagittarius, it's more one-pointed purposefulness in Sagittarius. Now remember, if you already don't know that the keynote for Sagittarius, I see the goal. I reach the goal, and then I see another. So then you go for the other goal. And then when you reach that, you go for the other goal. So it's also moving around with great activity. Both are active in movement from intellect to intuition. So in Sagittarius, we talked about that instinctual instinct moves up to become intelligence, and intelligence eventually has to become intuition. There are the three I's: instinct, intelligence, intuition. And the intuition comes again through being able to see the higher for Sagittarius. Almost always with the intuition and the higher mind. Together they form the energy which creates the antikorana, bridging the lower mind and the higher mind. So Mercury for Gemini is the lower mind, and Sagittarius is considered the higher mind. If we were to look at the two houses, the third house and the ninth house, many times the descriptors for that house, for Gemini, it says the everyday concrete mind. And for Sagittarius, for the ninth house, it would say higher mind, abstract. This is a spiraled up version of the other. Okay. There you go. Look at that. A vessel to be filled, but a fire to be kindled. What are their points of cooperation? Now, although they don't rule these centers, there is a resonance with these centers. And we can look at the throat center, which expresses the various points of view. In Gemini, it'll be more verbal and filled with variety. While in Sagittarius, it'll be more impassioned with all its fire and philosophical. The throat center is an important means of expression for both and related to the expression of intelligence. Many times we will make reference to the throat center being the center of the mind, the mental center in the body, because it is where you speak it, where you say it, where you write it, where you communicate it. Both are closely related to the Ajna center. The Ajna center, if you look at depictions of it, it looks like the infinity sign. So it's dualistic. That's the Ajna center. And Gemini, which has Venus as its esoteric ruler, Venus is the ruler of the Ajna center. And Sagittarius, for the power of unifying the Ajna center, which is then a major directing and integrating center. The Ajna center is the center that coordinates and directs all the functions of the other vehicles. And therefore, it's the coordinator of the personality as it changes and directs what needs to be directed. I can almost visualize it like a dial on a radio as you're trying to find the right station and you play back and forth to try to hit right on the right station. Well, in that way, that's what the Ajna Center does. It coordinates, integrates, and directs what needs to be done in the form, in the body.
Eva?
Yes.
Rachel made a comment, and it was the slide before this, but she says left brain, right brain. I think it was in reference to the Gemini concrete mind and Sagittarius the higher mind. So,
sure, right. That's a good a way to see that. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Let's move on. More points of cooperation. They both, as we've said, attempt to achieve mental perspective through wide exposure. Now, how is that wide exposure seen in Gemini? It masters the details of the big picture, while in Sagittarius, it's the major themes. Both greatly value freedom of mobility and language in any type of confined or overly repetitive situations. Get bored easily. They need the stimulation, mental stimulation for both of them. One of them may want more action to be for the stimulation, and the other one may want more books or more things to read and to learn, but they both need that stimulation of the mind. Both signs are known for their keenness of vision, and there is a certain liveliness to be found in their eyes. That's very interesting how the eyes will sparkle and the eyes will dance, and you can see fire in the eyes sometimes, the passion that comes through in the eyes, the excitement when you have something that you want to share, it comes through in the eyes. Now, Michael Robbins is quite the expert at recognizing people's features, and I've had several classes with him where we've learned to recognize various signs and planets by the way people's features are. So here is one of the things that he's discovered, and that has to do with the aliveness in the eyes. They both share a rather buoyant sense of humor and are generally known for their positive attitudes. Isn't that a good thing, right? And the buoyancy, you can see that in the Jupiter, and in Gemini, it is the Venus and the Mercury and all of that. And again, that would come out in their eyes. Both are mutable signs and related to the intelligence of the Christ aspect of the soul, which is what the mutable signs are there to help us learn so that the Christ can be birthed and can be born and can be then expressed. It's the second aspect. Okay. Gemini represents duality, which is love, wisdom, and fluidity. It governs control of every pair of opposites. Now, if you remember when we first started this series, we went through a lot of pairs of opposites, personality versus soul, the etheric and the physical. And I mean, there's constant polarities everywhere. Well, Gemini is known to eventually bring together, to unify, to control, to dissipate those pairs of opposites. It's the underlying love of deity which reaches our solar system through Gemini. See, so the underlying love of deity is the second ray of love wisdom, and it is through Gemini that it reaches our solar system. That's a big piece there. I mean, we see it in print, we don't think about it, but to think that the love of deity reaches our solar system, not just our planetary system, but our solar system through Gemini. Sagittarius is focused, it's direction, it's one-pointed activity. In the early stages, as we've said, it's the satisfaction of desire. You go after what you want, what you desire, whether it's something as simple as the ice cream in the freezer, or if it's another person, you go after to satisfy that desire. In the later stages, it's aspiration for the higher, which eventually leads to initiation. Gemini is the control of opposites. It synthesizes it and creates that at-one-ment. And Sagittarius is one-pointed preparation for initiation. The axis is one of establishing control of the opposites and resolving those dualities for use in a one-pointed spiritual action. They work really well together, as you can see. Let's see what else we have here, if anything. We do. And those are some quotes from esoteric astrology. So Gemini is sometimes called the constellation of the resolution of duality into a fluid synthesis. It governs all the pairs of opposites, preserving the magnetic interplay between them, keeping them fluid in their relations in order eventually to facilitate their transformation into unity. For the two must finally become the one. The 12 opposites must become the blended six, and this is brought about by the fusion in consciousness of the polar opposites. And that is what our goal here has been, to try to bring together the opposites and make and fuse them so that they become the blended. To the initiate whose intuition is functioning, they constitute but six great potencies. That's when the 12 have become the six, because he has achieved the freedom of the two, as it is sometimes called. Okay, so here we're basically summing everything up. In Gemini, the second ray is conveyed in Gemini, and it's mutable air. While in Sagittarius, we have all three rays, 4, 5, and 6. It's also mutable, and it's fire. Opposites are always on the same cross or the same mode. The ruler is Mercury, which conveys the fourth ray for Gemini. While in Sagittarius, it's Jupiter conveys the second ray. In Venus, as the fifth ray, is conveyed through the esoteric ruler for Gemini, while in Sagittarius, it's Earth conveying the third ray. Now, if we look at the numbers, the rays themselves, in Gemini, you have ray 2, ray 4, ray 5. In Sagittarius, you also have ray 2, you have ray 4, you have ray 5. You have ray 6, which makes Sagittarius totally different in that respect. And ray 5 has to do, as you know, with the mind. Ray 4 has to do with the relationship between and bringing things together. And they both do share ray 3, even though we don't have it here because it's the hierarchical ruler for Gemini. So they both share 3 as well. So the only ray that is out of the range here is the sixth ray. And Sagittarius is really strong with its sixth ray. It's one of the stronger rays for Sagittarius. So we look at the key phrases, and they're very good to use in meditation, especially during the full moons. And we all know by now that when we refer to the full moon of whatever sign we're talking about, whether it's the full moon of Gemini, the moon is not in Gemini. It's the sun that is in Gemini. The moon is in its opposite sign, which is then Sagittarius. So always in the full moon, you have the sun is in the sign that we call, well, the full moon of. While in fact, it's the moon that's in the opposite. We just went through an Aries full moon. Well, Aries is where the sun is right now. We all know that because we're in spring and that's where the sun is. But the moon is actually in Libra. So the keynotes, these are important to contemplate, to meditate on, because they bring great insights as you do. In Gemini, I recognize my other self. And in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. And we know that those two lights in the sky, we know one is brighter than the other. The one is waxing while the other one is waning. And that is exactly what is referred to. Now, which one is waning? Which one is waxing? In Sagittarius, I see the goal. I reach that goal, and then I see another. So Sagittarius is always on the move, looking to fulfill whatever the goal is. Now, the Tibetan gives us some more ways of seeing the light that is being distributed by these, by all the signs, actually. But these two, he says that in Gemini, it's the light of interplay, like the interplay between twins. This is a line of light beams revealing that which opposes, or the basic duality of manifestation, the relationship of spirit and a form. It is the conscious light of that relationship. So we see that duality, spirit and form, the interplay between these two lights. In Sagittarius, the light is a beam of directed, focused light. In this, the point of light becomes the beam, revealing the greater light ahead and illumining the way to the center of the light. Okay.
Before we move on to the last slide, I just wanted to mention that, you know, I really like to consider these lights when we look at the full moons because, you know, as Eva said, we look at it as the solar fire version of the full moon, but it is an opposition. It's a very special alignment that's happening between the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon. But because we are focusing on the solar fire aspect of it, as Eva just said, we considered it the Aries full moon because the sun was in Aries. And so to me, these lights become very important when you're considering the solar fire aspect of it. So that's just one of the various different ways that we can try and connect with this powerful energy at these times of the full moon. And especially now that we have the Aries one, it's the first major festival of the year. Next month will be the Waisak festival. And then the third one in Gemini, the Asala festival. Those are the three main festivals of the year. These are the beginning of our astrological year, the beginning of spring, all those things. So I just wanted to point that out.
Maybe you could also add what the full moon of Aries is supposed to, you know, what is its purpose? Because we know it's a spiritual festival, but what exactly happens during that period of time?
I'd have to pull up my little cheat notes, and I'm not sure if I have them readily available, but I will look at that while you discuss the next. Rachel says, that the only ray absent is ray 7. And I think you were pointing that out, she heard you to say ray 6 instead of ray 7, but you meant ray 7. Yeah. And she also...
No, actually, just a sec. I did not mean ray 7. I meant that ray 6 is the only one that isn't in common with one another.
Oh, in common.
I did not mean to say that.
Okay. In common.
Yeah. Ray 6 is the one that is only associated with Sagittarius. The other ones are associated with both. This has nothing to do with ray 7.
Okay. All right. And then she also, Rachel also says that the Earth is conjoined the moon. Yes. I probably misspoke there. You're right. It's there. The Earth is conjunct the moon at the time of the full moon, and the sun is opposite the two of them. And during the new moon, the moon is conjunct the sun and opposite the Earth, and both of those are powerful alignments, but the one that is more powerful and that DK talks the most about is that the full moon. But I'll look that up while you talk about the next slide to get the...
Otherwise I could fill that in too, but that's fine.
Go ahead then if you have that.
Okay, well, what we know from the from Aries, the purpose of the Aries full moon and why it's such an important period of time is this is when Shambhala, which is where the Lord of the World is, Sanat Kumara, with all his other Kumaras, and they sit around and they then discuss what it is that they want to see projected for that particular year. And that is then given to hierarchy. So this is where the plans are being made, the ideas, Aries, ideas of what needs to then be forecasted in a way, what they would like to see the next year to be done. Then we have the Taurus full moon, where we know that the Buddha comes to us with a message and with the energy of Shambhala that he then gives it to us for 8 minutes out of that period, and then he withdraws. And then in the festival of the Christ, we have the distribution through the Christ of the energies that have been received at Waisak through the Buddha. So it's the distribution that goes down through hierarchically from the top right down to the initiates and then through the disciples and then down to humanity. So there's there's this three-pronged spiritual period of time. One, the ideas, what they are supposed to be, it's conveyed to hierarchy. Hierarchy then sends their emissary, which is the Buddha, to reach us, and then it's all distributed at the Christ festival.
Thank you, Eva. I just wanted to say I pulled up my little cheat sheet on it, and there's an excerpt from the Reappearance of the Christ, page 154 to 156, that discusses these. And what I can do is I can include this with the slides and the recordings for those of you who want to look at it.
That's a great idea.
So thank you for having that information while I looked for the information. Okay. All right. So we're ready to go on to our last slide. Mm-hmm. We don't get very many of these, so. Go ahead and take it away, Eva, with our triple Gemini here.
Well, what do we see here? I'd like you to use your cursor as much as possible here. So we see that there is a triple Gemini, a Gemini ascendant. The sun is in Gemini in the first house, while the moon is in Gemini in the second house. So we have a lot of Geminian energy. And the only planet that's opposite is, of course, the Earth, because the Earth is always opposite the sun. It doesn't mean it doesn't have an effect. It always has an effect, but there are no other planets. So this person needs to find ways of integrating some of that abstractness, directness, one-pointedness of Sagittarius to balance out all that beautiful ability to learn, to gather information, to convey this information that Gemini does so beautifully. You see, if you look later on a little further, he's got like four or five planets here, five planets in Cancer, but he does have other planets, like especially Mars, which is it's a very good ruler of Capricorn. So he's got that ability to balance that out, and he also has his Chiron in Capricorn, but he doesn't really have planets in Sagittarius to try to really balance a lot of that Sagittarian energy. So it's good to see all of this when we look at a chart, to see how easily does this person balance and try to integrate the oppositions.
I think the word you were looking for was exalted.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. It's amazing. When you stand up here, your mind goes blank in many areas. But
you
anyway.
I also want to point out that he's got these three, you know, his triple Gemini threat here. And of course, you know, we have to overcome the moon, work on the personality, and then really express the purpose of the soul through the ascendant. And I would say these are on different levels for him. You know, it's a new spiral up, for an opportunity to relate, and overcome the prison of the soul of the moon. Just as it's a new spiral up for the work of the ascendant. And how can we differentiate that? Well, we've used his chart before because it's such a great one for this. They're all in different decanates of the sign. So this is the Gemini decanate. This is the Gemini Venus.
Libra.
Right. And this is the Uranus decanate. You know, because the decanates all match the sign, the air sign. They go by the rulers of the other air signs. So that's a subtle way that we can look at this triple Gemini and try and work things out. You know, the other thing is, as Eva mentioned, the Sagittarius portion of it and the balance, you know, this is the earth, the most grounded aspect of it here, the ruler of Sagittarius esoterically. And it's in the middle here, again, emphasizing the balance that's necessary, for this Gemini that he's got over here. Okay, we have a question, I think.
This is a good time for questions.
Yes, it is. Okay, Rachel says exaltation. She was answering you, and she says that Shambhala is the coronal center of the earth and receives powerful information for the year. Yes, that's from the Aries festival. So thank you, Rachel, for that. Okay, are there any other questions? Yes, okay. Go ahead, Yvonne.
Eva, would you repeat the second and third decanate of Gemini, what they were and why they are again?
Well, I'd be able to
do it. Gemini. Yeah.
Okay. The first decanate of any sign is always ruled by the traditional ruler of that sign. So the ascendant is in the first decanate. It's Gemini or Gemini Mercury. Okay. The second decanate of an air sign is going to be the very next air sign. So that's Libra or Venus is the ruler of this decanate. And the third decanate is always going to be the next sign. So that would be Aquarius or Uranus.
It's also worth mentioning that there are 30 degrees in a sign. Whether they're all in one house or not, it doesn't matter. So the first 10 degrees is for the very first sign that we're talking about. It's always the sign that we're talking about. So the first 10 degrees. The next 10 degrees would be, like BL said, the next sign as you're following the chart around in the order in which they come through. And then the third one would be the third one, which would be, in this case, it's Aquarius.
Right. Start with now, Gemini. Yeah, we got lucky here because we started with Gemini. But let's start with Sagittarius over here, okay? The first decanate of Sagittarius is going to be the Sagittarius or Jupiterian one. So that's the last of the fire signs. So the second decanate, which is where his Earth is going to be the next fire sign up, which is Aries. Okay, and then the last decanate would be the next fire sign from that, which would be Leo. So it always goes by the next element in line from wherever it starts. I hope that was clear. Was that clear, Yvonne?
Yes, thank you very much. I understand now.
Okay.
You know, and using the decanates, as much as this is not part of our presentation really, but when we're analyzing charts, when we're using decanates, it adds another dimension to understanding how a person behaves and acts. I did not realize early on when I first started astrology how important and how it ends up being so when you do engage and start working with the decanates. It definitely adds a lot.
Yes, it really, really does. Okay, now Rachel here says, Mercury, the sole ruler for this person, is in Cancer. Okay, his Mercury is right here in Cancer. And Cancer,
so it's not the sole ruler, it's the exoteric ruler.
Right, it's the exoteric ruler of his chart. Is right, in Cancer. Absolutely. The esoteric ruler is Venus, and it is also in Cancer. Mm-hmm. So the same thing applies. It's very important in this chart. She says more tender and less mental. Well, that's probably a really good way to look at it. You know, Venus is a mental, it's also relations. Cancer, of course, is the tenderness and the compassion. I would say that relates. Rachel says more creative in form also. She adds that in there. Yes, that could be too. All right, Suzanne.
So this person has a lot of air. With the triple Gemini, a lot of water with all the Cancer, and the Earth with Mars there in the Earth sign. So he's got all three elements, you know, well established.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I was pointing all that out to you on my other computer, which none of you could see. But yes, he does. He has, if you look at the table of the elements, they're all represented there. The modes, he could use a little more fixed, but he's got that there in his ICMC axis. So that's an important axis. All right, let me see.
I don't see any questions.
There are a couple more questions, and I'm sorry, I don't understand your question, Suzanne. What about a planet at, say, 20 degrees relates to two rulers?
I guess she's talking about the decanates.
Right.
You know, 20
degrees would be the third decanate.
Right.
As we start at zero. So does that answer your question, Suzanne? Uh, Okay. So the first decanate would be 0 to 9. The second decanate would be 10 to 19. And the third decanate would be 20 to 29. Okay, I don't see any more hands and I don't see any more questions. Next month up for us is going to be not next month at all. Let me see. Because of the conference, we won't be, our next time up is the 13th of June, and that will be the Cancer, Capricorn one. So,
yeah, 13th of June.
Right. Okay, well, everybody have a happy Easter. Everybody stay safe. This self-isolation works, but we can still be very communicative through all the electronic means that we have. Yes. Yes, we have some great means of doing that.
Can I put a plug in for the conference?
Yes, course you can.
Okay. The conference is on. It is being presented on the Zoom platform, the Zoom meetings. Registration will be opened up again soon. That is all being worked out as the links for the meetings are being established. So please stand by, and as soon as the registration is opened up, there will be messages going out through Constant Contact, and please register and come and participate.
And from what I understand, it's not going to be where you have to sit in front of your computer all day. It's going to be a maximum of 5 hours throughout the day with time off for lunch and for breaks and so on.
So the starting time is going to be set at 1 p.m. GMT. And then it will go on. It will start at 1 p.m. GMT, other than the day of the WASAC. And that actual full moon, WASAC full moon, will be celebrated during this conference.
Wonderful. There's a hand up there, Victor.
Yes, yes. Hi, Victor. Good to see you here.
Hi, how are you guys?
Pretty
good. I saw something on the news about Zoom. Sent a message.
Right, we got you.
I don't know what that was about and everything, but it was something about it been hacked or something like that. So I was wondering if that's could be a problem or something.
Can I address that?
Sure.
Yes, there was a problem. It was hacked. As a matter of fact, there was this man giving his dissertation virtually for his PhD to a number of professors, and all of a sudden all this porn came up, and that's what they had to look at. Well, the person who owns Zoom or is the basic manager, I heard him interviewed, and he said that they have taken measures. Now it's far more secure than before. Now you need to have a password, whereas before you didn't have to have a password. So that security is in place. Nothing to fear.
And those passwords will be required. Essentially, the password will be embedded in the link. So you have to have the link, and you do not share the link with others once you register.
Michael, Yvonne has a question. Do you have to download Zoom to participate?
You don't have to, but it is helpful. When you download it, you essentially open up a free Zoom account. There is no cost for that.
I guess it's similar in a way.
I'm sorry.
It's similar to the webinars. And in order to get in, I have to download the package or whatever it is to get into a webinar. I don't use it again because every time it's a brand new webinar. So maybe it's similar to that.
It is similar to that, yes.
Right, and it allows the students to participate. You can raise your hand. You can type the questions like you can here. You know, it's just a similar platform to this.
And it's being presented on this platform as close as possible to the in-person conference. Other than it's not of an interminable duration every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael.
And thank you, everybody, for participating. We hope to see you on the 13th of June for the Cancer Capricorn version.
And again, this is going to be posted on, is it on two platforms or just one?
I will be posting it, this particular one or the conference?
No, this.
Okay. I'll be posting this to Makara. I don't know. They're working on getting things up on YouTube, but there have been some issues lately. So, but I will definitely post this within a couple of hours to Makara, and I will send the email out to let everybody know that it's there so they can download the recording, they can get the PDF, and as I said, I'll also put in the spiritual festivals, the excerpt from Reappearance of the Christ.
What about MoriaFederation.com?
We don't post it on MoriaFederation.com. We don't post the recordings there. We just have the announcement there 24/7. So if anybody goes to MoriaFederation.com, they will see the announcement. They will be able to use the link to register. And it also has the link for where the recordings are. But the recordings are actually on Makara.us. So.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Happy Easter. Happy whatever.
Love and blessings to everyone. Yes. See you all at conference.
Yes.
Bye. Bye.